Welcome to the Timberwolves Talk Podcast. I am Michael Rand, Chris Hine here as well. Chris, we have a winning streak to talk about.
Yeah, for the first time in 2 months.
First time in 2 months that the Timberwolves have strung together two wins in a row. Did it in back-to-backs. New Orleans game, which was kind of a surprise, I would say. New Orleans, you know, very much a resurgent team trying to battle its way back into a playoff spot. Had been, you know, 20-12 or something since that really awful start, and had gotten Zion back, and you know, kind of looked like they were New Orleans kind of in control of that game. And the Wolves had a good fourth quarter, kind of like they did against Miami, and just swooped in and got that win. Maybe less unexpected was the win over Chicago in the returning back to Target Center, but still, two wins in a row for this team is nothing to sneeze at. What have you been seeing? I guess from these new Wolves.
Yeah, I think the last two nights the stars of each game was Malik Beasley and Naz Reid. In my eyes, Beasley has been on fire these last two games, averaging 26 points a game, and just looking like a starter in the NBA.
Yeah.
And a good starter at that. And Naz Reid continuing his development. There were some rough stretches on that road trip for him, especially as it related to foul trouble. But he was able to stay out of foul trouble. And when he did, he looks like he belongs on an NBA floor, especially on the offensive end of the floor. Defense is going to take some time, as it does with most rookies.
Seems like that's gotten even a little bit better
a
lately.
I thought he did okay against Zion. I mean, Zion got a decent amount of his points in transition that Reed had nothing to do with the other night. But I thought he did okay in terms of making things at least a little difficult for Zion. And offensively, he's very skilled. And you see that in some of his post moves. Obviously, he can shoot. We knew that. So I think that these last two games have been a big step forward for Naz Reid as well.
I like fans on Twitter like to call him the plus-minus god because he's he seems to always finish on the plus side, even in losses. I think this is five games in a row he's been on the plus side, and seven of the last eight that he's been on the plus side for them, including all three of their recent victories. He's not always way plus, but yeah, plus 12 against Chicago. 5-for-12 from the field, 3-of-3 from three-point range. That had been kind of falling off lately, so good to see him get going from there again. And, he's been kind of a pleasant surprise. What, back-to-back double-doubles that he's had?
Yeah,
16-11.
First two career double-doubles, yep.
13-14. So, yeah, it's an interesting development. Obviously, getting more playing time because Karl Anthony Towns is out. We should get an injury update on Towns, we would think, tomorrow, but still... Still waiting on that one to see, you know, what Towns' status is going to be. Interesting stat I found about Karl Anthony Towns today when I was just curious. Wolves actually have a better winning percentage. Again, neither of these numbers are particularly flattering, but they have a better winning percentage when he is out of the lineup this year versus when he's in. They're 10-25 when he plays, 9-17 when he doesn't. Uh-huh. Neither of those are great. The difference in winning percentage is like 350 versus 280 or 290. I wouldn't read too much into it either, but it's still kind of strange, isn't it? That they would be.
Yeah, I guess. I'm thinking back to like when they had that first long losing streak.
Yes.
During the season, and he was hurt, and then they started winning some games, but it was against teams that weren't very good.
I think
some of that you have to look at who they were beating and who they were losing to during those games.
And again, now playing the Bulls.
Right. So, if Karl-Anthony Towns is on the floor last night, I don't think that game turns out any differently, for instance.
Yeah. Fans are still curious to see what this looks like when he's been in there, will be in there. So I guess the encouraging thing is two wins in a row, three out of their last five, including the good win at Miami. Without him, when he does, you know, whenever he is able to come back, and we don't know if that'll even be this year, we'll have to see what that update is Friday. They're starting to put together a offensive identity now that looks pretty good.
Yeah, it does, and they're getting the same kind of looks, I think, that they were getting earlier in the season.
Right.
There's better shooters that are hitting these looks, and it looks a little better. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm think since the trade deadline, they have a pretty highly rated offensive rating. I don't know if you can look that up pretty quickly here. But in general, it looks good. Russell looks good. Beasley looks good. The kind of shots they're getting what they want. Josh Okogie has played well. Jared Culver's even shot better of late. It looks a lot better than it did a month ago.
Yeah, that's true. It just looks so much different than it did a month ago too. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing we have to remember too is, you know, they have undergone so many changes that there's going to be some, you know, making evaluations on the fly can be a little bit difficult. It's defensive rating since the trade deadline, 27th, so not great. Offensive rating, they fell a little bit. They're eighth. I think the Dallas game probably hurt them quite a bit when they only scored 91 points in that game. But yeah, still eighth in offensive rating. Net ratings minus 3.4, but still not too bad. And again, showing some signs of improvement. By the way, when I did that quick search, this was since the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Defensive rating since then. Top team in the league is the Bucks at 97.6. The next best is the Grizzlies at 105.1. The Bucks are 7.5 points better defensive rating in the last 12, 13 games.
I feel like that
than anybody else.
Nationally, the conversation, the Bucks are just flying under the radar.
Kind of feels like everybody's talking really about the Lakers.
Because the Lakers, there's the drama and everything.
Other teams with drama, the big market teams with drama. Mm-hmm.
And the Bucks are just kind of there.
Just kind of quietly winning all of the games.
convincingly, too.
Yeah. They're looking like a pretty special team right now. How that works in the playoffs again, will they be playoff proof, mm-hmm. is another good question. But speaking of that offensive efficiency, you mentioned Beasley being the other star, Malik Beasley, and you're going to write about him for tomorrow. I took a little swing at kind of him in the context of shooting guards, wings that the Wolves have had in the past. This has been a kind of never-ending search for them to find a two-guard that can be there for the long haul. They haven't had a lot of guys like him, frankly. A two-guard who actually can shoot. Yeah. A shooting guard who shoots. someone who does job one of the job description. I've been maybe pleasantly surprised. I watched some video of him that somebody had posted before the trade. It looked like he wasn't great around the rim. He's been better around the rim than I thought he would be. Mm-hmm. He's not, and I don't think anybody's going to confuse him for Russell Westbrook and just this attack mode, but he's not just a one trick scorer.
No, he's not, and I think that's what has helped make him so threatening in the last month or so here, is that he's not just spotting up and shooting all night long. He can take it to the hole, and that's helpful. Now, obviously, they're not going to be needing him to do that a lot. They want him to be shooting threes because he is such a good three-point shooter. But obviously, it's better to have that weapon than to not have it.
Well, yeah, and you don't want to get too one-dimensional either. If you're suddenly, defenses can start game planning for you a little bit differently if that's all you can do. Some of the best shooters still have to be, unless you're J.J. Redick or somebody who's like almost exclusively only doing that, it's good to have a more well-rounded offensive game, and he seems like he's got that. He's averaging over 20 points a game with the Wolves, like 22 or so. He's getting 5 rebounds a game, so I think his rebounding for a guard is pretty good, pretty acceptable, especially for his size. He's not big.
No, he's not.
Which probably hurts him on the defensive end. He hasn't been great there. Mm-hmm. Rinse, repeat, say again about pretty much everybody on the roster, including D'Angelo Russell.
Right.
But does give you kind of a glimpse of, okay, this guy's going to be a restricted free agent. You got to imagine he's a priority given, that he was, probably the centerpiece of the Covington deal aside from the draft pick they got back.
Right.
That they're going to make every effort and have the ability to match anything that comes their way contract-wise that they would want to bring him back long-term. He's got to be loving it. He's making money right now.
This is a match for everybody involved in terms of that trade. For him, he's got an opportunity in a contract year to go out and prove himself. He's run with the opportunity. And if you're the Timberwolves, you're like, hey, look what we're offering you here. I think it's a great case to just say, you should stick with us long term because look what you're able to do here. Look at the the kind of role you're going to have here going forward, you know. And I think in free agency, if you look at that, it's like, okay, you know, do I want to try to go somewhere else where, you know, maybe I get buried again, or they don't use me quite as effectively, or right. do I want to stay here and right. and play major minutes and score 20 points a night, and, you know, yeah. have a role where I'm a leader on this team because yep. it's such a young team.
Right. And he's only 20. He just turned 23.
Yeah, he's
just
23.
He kind of matches the timeline they always talk yeah. about. He seems and looks older than the other guys. I don't know why it is. If I see him on the court, I feel like he's 25, 26, but he's actually younger than
yeah.
you know, younger than some of these other guys, but by a stretch, just by a little bit. So
I think it's been a great fit on both ends of the spectrum. He'll make a little bit of money this year, more than he would have before the trade.
I think so.
But the Wolves have the money to offer him. So
I'm always interested to see how those guys you look at on Basketball Reference who have those great per 36 minute stat right. lines. You know, the guys that come off the bench, play 15, 20 minutes, mm-hmm. but don't get as much time. When they do get that shot, is it
sustainable?
Yeah, is it yeah. sustainable? Are they, has their role been hiding some deficiencies where they're better suited for that, or have they, been undervalued or underplayed or caught in a numbers game, as mm-hmm. can be the case anywhere. And, when they do get the increased minutes, the production does match the minutes. And that's been the case with him so far, obviously
yeah.
they must have scouted that and believed that, but they've got to be heartened that that has come to fruition so far.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, like I said, it's a perfect fit of opportunity and the kind of style that the Wolves want to play, matching his skill set offensively right. and how proficient of a shooter he's been. And yeah, I think they're using him well. He seems to be meshing well with D'Angelo Russell, which is important.
Yeah.
I think that their skills complement each other. You know, Russell has the ball on his hands a lot, makes things happen. Beasley can play off of that. Beasley can make a play in a pinch, as we discussed. So I think that they complement each other well, in terms of what their strengths are on the floor.
You mentioned salary cap stuff next year. This mm-hmm. year is kind of interesting because they went into the luxury tax threshold to make some of these trades. The Golden State trade, mm-hmm. I think, was the one that pushed him over with, having to take on some contracts back.
Yes.
You've reported that Glenn Taylor is okay with that. They're barely over the threshold, mm-hmm. like by $500,000, a little bit less right now.
About $400,000.
The Allen Crabbe, they bought him out. The Evan Turner thing has been kind of weird. He's still with the team. They couldn't do a buyout yet, at least. Mm-hmm. That deadline has passed. What are some of the inner workings of that, and what we think about that?
Yeah, so I guess we'll go back to the Golden State trade.
Yep.
Well, we might as well go back to the Allen Crabbe trade, first of all, because the Wolves...
Let's go back to the Nikola Pekovic signing. Okay. Anyway, the Gorgie Dieng contract. No, yeah.
The Crab trade created about $1 million in cap space, and it's clear now that they were trying to make as much space as possible to get to land Russell. Yep. This was the goal, and so that trade was a way to get off of right. about $1 million in salary.
Right, because it was Crabbe for Teague, and right. Teague right. has more to offer as a player right now. I don't think Correct. Anybody would argue that, even if the system fit was bad. He's a better player than Allen Crabbe.
Right, but he's not a long-term fit for the franchise and how you want to play, so therefore move right. on from him, get what you can.
Right.
Golden State, the Covington trade happens. That's one thing to get younger, right. to get Beasley and Hernan Gomez in here, get that draft pick,
right.
because you're going to be giving up another first-round pick to get Russell.
Right.
But both sides of that trade, Golden State wanted to get under the tax this year.
Right.
Because they want to avoid repeater penalties.
They're going to be a repeater.
And they're going to be a repeater right. going forward, most likely, just with all the contracts yep. they have on the books.
Including Andrew Wiggins for now.
So to do that, the Wolves had to take Spellman and Evans back, which pushed right. them over the cap.
Neither of whom have seen the light of day.
Right. They've been in Iowa mostly.
Yeah.
So the front office goes to Glenn Taylor, says, hey, to make this work, Golden State, one of the things they want out of the deal is to get under the tax. So that's, if the owner is willing to pony up a couple, a decent paycheck.
If you're 400,000 over, what's the payment?
I believe it's just one for one, isn't it? If you just pay, again, I'm new to the salary right. cap machinations here, but I believe it's for your first time, isn't it? One for one, however much you're over, that's what you pay. But maybe there's a minimum you have to pay. I don't know.
Okay.
But so Glenn Taylor tells the front office, don't not make a trade because it puts us into the luxury tax. If you have to go into the luxury tax to make this happen, I will pay it. And so that gave them the room to maneuver in this Russell trade. But they go into the tax. So, you know, now they have to be mindful going forward of repeater penalties and things like that.
So the standard tax for $5 million or less over is basically $1.50 per...
Oh, $1.50.
Okay. So they'd basically be an extra $600,000 at this point.
Right. So the other part of it is you don't get the payout from teams that are luxury tax teams. When they pay the tax, the payout that gets redistributed to the other non-tax teams. So you do miss out on that.
Yep.
But they had calculated that that was not going to be very high this year, and that was another reason why they felt comfortable going into the luxury tax. That's just what I've heard from sources. So they do it. But now they're trying to find a way, if they can, to get back under the tax, because obviously you'd rather not have to pay it if you can help it.
Right.
So the Crab buyout created a little bit of room, got them down to the 400,000 figure. Now we see what happens with Evan Turner and if they're able to make a buyout happen there, and can that get underneath the tax as well? Don't know.
Right.
We'll see.
Because there's not much else they can do right now to get under, right? Because they're past the trade deadline.
Right.
We're past some of these other possibilities. And okay, so that's interesting. I mean, again, the repeater is what you want to avoid, because that gets starts to get really expensive.
Right.
Just looking at the kind of the chart now, basically, if you're $5 million or less under the over the tax, your standard tax is $1.50, but your repeater is $2.50. And if you're a repeater that's over $20 million over the tax, you're paying $4.75 per dollar. So you're paying $100 million in tax.
Yes, yes.
Which is talking about Golden State territory, perhaps, if they're going to be carrying three, four max guys going forward. So the penalty isn't quite as severe if you're simply over it for the first time instead of being a repeater. So
Right.
But we imagine the Wolves won't be a repeater next year, so it's not.
Right. That's the thing. The Crab, what are the contract slots of Crab and Evan Turner come off the books?
Right.
That's about 30-plus million that's coming off your books next year. They're going to have to re-sign Beasley at a comparable number to what those guys were making. So he probably takes up one of those slots, but that still leaves you with room under the tax. You can go over the tax to sign, or go over the cap to sign him, because you have his bird rights. That's not an issue.
Right.
And it just leaves you with some room to wiggle. Even if you do end up with two draft picks, you should be okay.
Right. So there's that. Also, I wouldn't imagine this comes into play. James Johnson's is a player option next year. I would imagine he opts into that.
This is also all assuming that James Johnson does take that player option. Yeah. Yes.
And at this point,
if he doesn't, then that's even more space potentially that you have to.
But James Johnson's probably not going to get $15 million on the open market.
So
even as good as he's been here so far, which we'll get into in a minute.
I think the assumption is that he takes that.
Right, because that was basically the Gorgie swap, and
correct.
That was. He's a comparable salary to Gorgie. Let's talk about James for a minute, because he's got an interesting fashion sense. He wears the furs. He's got the sweaters.
Yeah.
He's into the fashion.
Mm-hmm.
He did a shirtless interview on FSN last night. Apparently that was a little misunderstanding. He thought he was going to be on radio. That's fun.
Yeah.
He's got the speaker. He bought everybody, what, ribs the other day?
Was going to, but there was a problem with the ribs,
okay.
as I found out.
Okay.
The restaurant failed to deliver them.
It was an attempt to get the team
attempt
ribs.
To buy ribs on the plane,
And he's emerged kind of as this veteran leader on a team that doesn't have a whole lot of them at this point, and one that's been better on the court than I would have imagined. I've kind of assumed he was just a salary filler and that he was going to be buried on the end of the bench, and he's played meaningful minutes in a good way.
Yeah, and that's been a nice little trade for them, making that last-minute deal, because he, again, Gorgie played well while he was here, but again, I don't think that his game was necessarily a fit for how they wanted to play offensively. You just look at what their offensive rating was when he was
wasn't great
playing.
The
major
defensive
minutes.
Rating was better.
The defensive rating was very good. The offensive rating was not. But Johnson is I didn't realize how versatile he was as an offensive player in terms of his ability to handle the ball, play a little point forward or point center at times.
Yep.
And like you said, he's a leader in that locker room. He's the oldest player in the locker room now.
The OG.
By a lot.
Yeah.
And he, I will say, just being around him the last month, he is a very he's very upbeat. He brings a lot of positive energy to that locker room. Guys, you can see guys respond to him. You know, like I said, and as we've seen the last two wins, he's playing the music after the game with his speakers and everything. And he's organized off the court activities when they were in Miami a week ago.
Yeah,
like he was organizing a day at the beach and doing stuff for the team that way. So he's been a big part of what's gone on here the last month.
I'm just noticing he's 33. If we discount Evan Turner, who's technically on the team but hasn't really been with the team.
Mm-hmm.
Next oldest is Jake Layman at 25.
Yeah.
So he is, like you said, by far the oldest. But that does speak to the youth on this roster by choice. You know, when they talk about how young they are, let's not forget they have made the decision to be this young. So
right.
It's not like someone is saying you can't have any 28, 29-year-old players on your team. You must be this young. But it does speak to how young they are and how little experience in some cases they are, and you know how many guys who don't have a ton of experience are playing. Two of them who I wanted to bring up, we talked about Naz Reid a little bit already. Mm-hmm. Jordan McLaughlin, another one. Two undrafted guys who, and Keelan Martin you could even put in that conversation too, who are playing decent minutes. Jordan McLaughlin's got more than I thought he did. I was pretty dismissive of him early in the year, and maybe that's a mistake. You just kind of have this impression of somebody based on their status, their size. Mm-hmm. He's been a lot better than I thought he would be.
Yeah, he's been a very good backup point guard right now. He knows the system well because he's run it in Iowa, and he was also a part of the Nets system, which is where Pablo Prigioni came from. So he was in their G League system for a while, running a similar system. He's been one to kind of dictate to other guys where they should be or where they need to be. They listen to him because he knows what he's talking about, and he's kind of helped ingratiate some of these guys into how they need to play. And it's weird to think about that coming from a two-way player, but that's kind of the role he's had. He's been an essential kind of glue guy over this last month as well, because he just has institutional knowledge of how the offense is supposed to run from the point guard position that nobody else has.
We haven't talked about the other point guard yet, D'Angelo Russell.
Yes.
By the way, that guy. Watching him play is interesting. I don't think I had watched him a ton before he gets here. His style is different than a lot of I see where, and again, these are my words, not theirs. I see where there's maybe a Harden comparison to be made, and just, you know, not just the left-handed or the size, but just the way he's kind of deliberate, the way he kind of does that step back shot, the you know, he's a good passer, but again, more of that quote unquote lead guard and not a true point guard in that sense.
Yeah.
What he's played 9 games. They managed to play both games with the back to back, so they didn't get fined yesterday.
Yeah.
What are your impressions of him on the court right now?
I think it's a fit. I think one of the things that I've been struck by, and even watching him play the couple games that they played against Golden State this year, you could see it. I'm struck by, and maybe this is a Harden thing too, he does not need a lot of space to get off a shot and to make a shot. Like you see a guy that's maybe decently close to him, and he'll just do a little step back move, get off a three, and it has a decent shot of going in.
Yeah.
It's not a bad shot when he does that.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that he seems to, whenever he wants to, he can get a shot. And he makes it a decent enough clip that it's not a bad shot, even if that's all he's doing is trying to create a little space with a little step back just to get off a shot.
And that's particularly useful in end of games. And we've seen them pull out two kind of comeback wins at Miami and at New Orleans, where he's, you know, he's played roles in both of those cases. You know, when you don't have a point, when you have a point guard that can't create like that or can't get his own shot, which became probably the most frustrating thing about the Ricky Rubio era here. Especially people like Ricky Rubio, you know, you got down to the last 4 minutes of the game when the defense tightened up, you know, not like people aren't paying attention, but the flow of the offense changes. It becomes a little bit more one-on-one, ball screen, pick and roll. You know, the offense becomes simplified sometimes. Russell's the kind of guy who can thrive in that kind of environment versus other kinds of point guards. That's what I've been kind of struck by, especially I think it was the New Orleans game. He had like 10 of his 23 in the fourth quarter of that game.
Yes, he did.
If I'm not mistaken, like somebody who can actually like someone as a point guard who's kind of a closer, which like they, you know, Teague kind of fits that bill a little bit, and Butler was that for a year, but they've really lacked a guard who can be that. And, you know, I think in Russell and even Beasley, they kind of have two now who can be kind of fourth quarter scorers when baskets are harder to come by.
And I wonder what that'll do to free up Towns when Towns gets back in those situations. Because for as good as Towns is, one of the hardest things to do, and I think we've seen that the last few years when Butler hasn't been here, is to get Carl the ball in those situations, your best offensive player, the ball in a crunch time situation. When he's not the one handling the ball, it's a little harder to do.
You can't create as much off the dribble if you need two, three passes to set up the right scenario for him to get the ball. It's a lot harder in those crunch time situations.
So I think maybe Russell can alleviate some of that just with the attention he's going to command and his passing ability. And especially if defenses also have to pay attention to Malik Beasley as well.
Let's get to a few Twitter questions before we get out of here. After all, we are not fake gym rats. We're not fake podcast rats. We are serious podcast enthusiasts. That was a James Johnson quote from the other day.
Yes.
I'm going to start with T-Gage, Tom Murphy. A neighbor of mine, did the Wolves score the two best players in the trades, Russell and Beasley?
Oof.
Interesting question.
That's a good question.
I like it because, you know, obviously, you know, if we're talking about the principals in those deal, obviously the four, you're talking about Covington and then obviously Wiggins, who were, you know, a couple of the better players on the previous
Covington
occasion.
Covington seems to have done a pretty good job in Houston.
Yeah.
Adjusting to what they want to do down there.
Different players. I think it's hard to compare Covington to a lot of players just because he's got a different skill set. But I think if they're being honest, they would have loved to have a Robert Covington for a couple of years.
Right.
Someone who plays defense like that, someone who you know, has those kinds of chops. And he's doing just fine in Houston. He's shooting 36.4% from three, averaging 13 points, eight rebounds, you know, a couple steals. He's kind of doing Robert Covington things. So I think he's probably still a better all-around player than Beasley. Russell is a different position entirely. I think.
Would you rather have Wiggins or Malik Beasley, taking salary considerations out of it?
My answer is jaded by 5.5 years of wanting Andrew Wiggins to be more consistent. I like a shooting guard that can shoot, and I just don't think Andrew Wiggins was ever going to be that. And if he wasn't going to be attack Wiggins quite enough to make up for the fact that he's only an okay shooter, and, you know, honestly, really for his career, a below league average 3-point shooter. Yeah, I mean, maybe skill-wise, it's more of a wash. It's kind of a preference, but you can't totally remove the salary from it. Just the fact that they are now out from underneath that contract, have reallocated it into the point guard that they've always wanted, and are now paying less for a shooting guard. You know, obviously his salary is going to go up, but won't be in Andrew Wiggins territory. I don't know what his. It'd be interesting to see what kind of offers or what his contract is going to be. Is he a $12 to $15 million a year kind of player?
I've heard in the just from people speculating. This isn't anything concrete. I've heard 15-ish.
Yeah, that seems like a There's
a lot that goes into it because it is restricted free agency in terms of what kind of market is there out there for you to capitalize right. on. There's not a lot of cap space coming up this summer just in terms of teams looking to make splashes in free agency. So just the number of teams willing to throw out that kind of money is going to be kind of low, and the Wolves know that.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to play into it. It'll be fascinating to see, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was somewhere in the 15, like the 13 to 15 range, or maybe even 16.
That makes sense. I think my answer to the question is no, they didn't get the two best players in the trade. My kind of comeback to that, mm-hmm. though, is that I would rather have Russell and Beasley than Covington and Wiggins. And that's not just a fit thing. I just think they're better modern NBA players, especially, you know, their ability to shoot.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Is Ryan Saunders gone after this season? Leslie Gettleman must go. Wants to know. He wants everybody gone, I guess.
I guess so. The answer is it would seem to be no.
Yeah,
All indications right now. I think our Jim Suhan wrote a column about this recently as well. Things that he was hearing around the team that Saunders is not really in danger of losing his job. I think when you've been handed the deck that Saunders has had at the second half of last year and the first half of this year, it's hard to really evaluate how he is as a coach. When you don't give him a roster that fits what you want him to install.
Yeah.
So I just think from that end of things that I don't think there's a way that they move on from him.
I don't think so. I think next year is going to be the telling year.
Next year is the telling year.
Assuming everybody's healthy, they've kind of, they're at least, you know, 50% of the way into the roster that they want to build. They've got players they want to see. If they're stalling and not winning games.
Right. You have a training camp to install everything you want to do. They've talked about that being a big thing. Yes, next year is the kind of we need to start seeing something here.
I think that's fair. So, I think I agree. He's back next season. A couple more questions. Boyd wants to know, do you think the Wolves want to keep Hernan Gomez as well as Beasley?
I do, yes. Yeah. Again, it's a restricted free agent situation. I think they like him a lot. What's he going to command? You never quite know with restricted free agency.
Yeah.
But I do think that he is also a player that fits into their long-term plans.
I don't know if he fits as a starter long-term. I don't know if he's...
I don't know either. They're starting him now.
Yeah, I like him as a piece.
They want an extended look at him, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he might be better suited as a backup four,
plays, you know, 20 minutes a game, good in a second unit, three-point shooter, getting up and down the floor. Maybe doesn't have to guard the best big in that case because he's a little limited defensively. He's not very big.
Right.
Zion just it was unfair on a couple of those possessions. Zion. Yeah. It's unfair of Zion against a lot of people, but I'd be happy to see him stay. I think he's brought enough. He shot the ball well. He and Beasley have a good chemistry coming from Denver together. There's a few possessions last night where there's a couple in a row where they kind of took over in the third quarter where those guys were playing well off of each other. Yeah. I thought so.
Also, by all accounts, a very good teammate, kind of a locker room guy that they're going to want to keep around as well. But again, at what cost?
Last question from Tom. When will Jordan McLaughlin get a one-way contract?
Yeah, interesting. Again, this plays into the cap situation as well, I think. And it's too hard to tell right now. I think with the cap, the luxury tax situation being what it is, I don't know that that's going to happen right away, but we'll see. There's a lot of moving parts there.
Is he good enough to be a backup point guard, like legitimately in this league, or is he going to find his space more as like a number three where he's just fine if one of your point guards gets hurt and then he plays 20 minutes a game.
Maybe that's more of his role going forward. I'm not 100% certain. But maybe because he just fits what these guys want to do so well.
Yeah, he's opened my eyes.
I don't know. I'm not sure what they're thinking. I don't know what the backup point guard market is going to look like as well.
Right.
And when you have a guy who already plays your system well, maybe you just roll with him. But I think that's definitely a scenario for Jordan McLaughlin's career too. The third point guard,
and you know, inevitably he's going to play 30 or 40 games during the year, probably because somebody gets hurt.
Yeah,
and he's not going to hurt you in that case. Mm-hmm. He's a capable guy when he gets in there. Good questions, everybody. Mm-hmm. We'll do this again soon. Who knows how many games in a row the Timberwolves will have won the next time we meet. Friday night, they've got Orlando again. Sunday, mm-hmm. rematch with Zion.
Then a six-game road trip. That may or may not just break my body down. We'll see.
Chris has been on a long – Chris needs a rest. Oh, that's for sure. We'll be back at it soon. Thanks for listening to the Timberwolves Talk podcast.